Judith Widges at Curry Coast Community Radio, KCIW, with Remembering When, where we search for our ancestors and investigate local history. Today I'm going to talk about planning a genealogical research trip. Genealogical research is a rewarding experience. You will learn amazing facts about your ancestors, geography, history, but most of all, you'll learn about yourself. Genealogical research is one hobby that requires using original records, often microfilm, the internet, and all of the other tools that are available. There is no database in a computer somewhere that has your family's complete history, all done in spite of what many people think. Even if there were such a database, I'm not sure I would trust it. My experience is that I've enjoyed the search as much as the results. It can be very exciting to find a record, a picture, and handwriting of a family member. Going to places where your families have lived, worked, and raised their families, and laid to rest, learning about them as much as possible can help you put your own life in perspective. There is no particularly easy way to fill in the missing pieces of family details, but investing your time and energy to do the research pays off enormously. Regardless of your age, your occupation, or situation, you can always continue to research your family history. For some people, genealogical research is an outlet, a passion, and even an addiction. We used to say that family history research becomes a disease, one that's hard to medicate. When planning a research trip, it's a good idea to keep in mind that by using your time in the most efficient way and being organized can eliminate some unnecessary frustration. If you can implement some of the suggestions and tips that I'd like to share with you, you will save time and make your research much more efficient and productive. You might even feel a sense of pride in the work and enjoy every minute of the wonderful world of family history research. So are you prepared for your trip to research your family tree? Being organized is a wonderful feeling. Thoroughly looking at the project, establishing a plan, and completing it provides a sense of accomplishment. First, it's a good idea to set a goal based on the information that you have. Prepare a list of objectives and the research that you need to accomplish. Your plan of action should include must-haves, records on your list. These are usually the ones that you cannot get anywhere else. Keep in mind that your first trip to any facility is a recon or an exploration of the records that are available. On future trips, you might be doing some more in-depth research. Dress for success. We used to think about this when we were in our careers, and I've made special note of how well staff in facilities will take care of you if you dress accordingly. If you go in a pair of raggedy old jeans, you won't get nearly the same kind of help as you would if you dress neatly and approach the staff in a very positive way. Approaching the staff with patience and a polite attitude will really pay off. I remember trying to help researchers in a busy library with four lines, telephone lines coming in. There was a large book collection, computers, and eight microfilm readers. I had to be very firm about getting a lunch break or a bathroom break. When I tried to leave, invariably researchers would insist, "This will only take a minute." One day I had to say, "It will only take me a minute to stop by the bathroom." Now, you want to choose your resource center. There are archives, libraries, museums, church records, historical societies, all kinds of places where you can look for facts. You can use online catalogs to help you plan your trip, which facilities you'll go to, and that sort of thing. By being aware of what the facility holds, you can make a research plan according to what resources are available. By doing a lot of the work at home before you leave, It will make for more efficient use of your time once you arrive at your destination. It's a good idea to secure some good maps of the area. Google Maps are easy to follow and they will help you save time as well. You need to take coins for photocopy machines, and sometimes you need them for lockers. Take a magnifying glass for close-up work. You might be looking at old handwriting or photographs. I like to use a three-ring binder. I use it for note-taking, and the ability to be able to remove and replace pieces of paper makes it ideal. If I'm in a situation where a binder isn't permitted in the facility, at least I take a piece of three-hole punched paper to fit in the binder, and then I can keep everything in place. You need to have research logs organized. It's a good idea to have one for each relative that you're researching. This keeps your note-taking in order, and you can find your organized records much easier, and it'll be easier to understand them when you take them home. For instance, in addition to individual logs, it's a good idea to record all the books that you look at, with call numbers, the authors and titles, for your research log. Not just a scrap of paper, please. And the reason for this is twofold. Many researchers neglect to record everything that they look at. Knowing what you've looked at and whether you've been successful or not only prevents duplication of the research, but it also helps you retrace your steps and you won't have to do it all again. Check the current phone number and address of the facility that you're going to go to. You need to check the hours of operation. These change with the seasons, and even though you might find it on the internet, it's not always the most up-to-date information. So it's a good idea, phone ahead and ask if you need to book a film reader or a computer. What do you need to do before you go there? I remember working in a research center and making a telephone reservation for a patron. She had called and said, "I want to book a reader." So I assumed it was a microfilm reader. There were no other kinds of readers. When she arrived, she asked, "Where was the reader?" And I said, "It's going to be number 2 over there." "Oh," but she said, "that's a machine." "Yes." "Well," she said, "I expected somebody was going to read to me." So it's a good idea to keep in mind that abbreviations, I was calling it a reader, and she was thinking reader, but really it was a microfilm reader. But in our research, we have lots of abbreviations and acronyms, and it can be confusing. So it's a good idea, spell everything out and make it clear. So I suggest, too, to make contact with genealogical societies or groups before you go to the area that you're going to be doing your research. Try to arrange to attend a meeting and meet some of the members. They are very, very helpful people, and it will really pay off. And before you leave home, too, you might need to book accommodation, somewhere to stay, or even a ferry. You might need to book a space. Label your notebooks. Everything that you take with you, include your phone number, address, and email. It's surprising how many people accidentally leave their very carefully collected research behind. I had a lady phone me one day and say that she'd accidentally picked up somebody's notebook full of great research. It had no identification on it, and it turned out that the research names that were in the book had no connection whatsoever with the lady's name who owned it. So if you label everything, maybe somebody can track you down. And do take copies of your original documents. Never, ever carry originals. Sometimes they just cannot be replaced. I've seen researchers with rare original documents just tucked into their notebooks. And if you lose those, it's going to be a real problem. In archives and special collections, they have rules that are often different to regular libraries. So again, phone in advance and ask them if there's anything you really need to know. Some facilities won't let you take anything more than a black lead pencil and a piece of paper into the facility. So all your personal belongings and those wonderful snacks and bottles of water and recorders and laptops and all those things would not be permitted to go into the facility. So be ready for that. I remember working in a genealogical library where I overheard one researcher telling another that for her convenience, she would slip a microfilm reader into her purse and take it home. That way she avoided the $2 an hour fee to use the microfilm reader, and she could use the microfilm at home on her own machine. Unfortunately, there are a few dishonest people who spoil things for other people. It's a good idea to prepare clear, specific questions for a librarian or an archivist, again, before you leave home. The questions should be short so that they could be easily answered in a short period of time. If you were looking for military records, you might want to ask, is there an armory in the neighborhood? And this could easily trigger the staff member to remember in broader terms where other things are that you could be looking for. If you have specific requirements or formats or for a variety of records, you might want to contact the archivist or librarian in advance to ask, can they give you what you're looking for? Usually the staff will not do your research for you. Be prepared with your reading glasses, paper, and pencil. You may be requested to wear gloves in some facilities because there are fragile items. Be prepared for the fact that not all archival materials may be viewed or even touched. So remember to keep on track. If you wander off topic, you might not be able to accomplish what you set out to do. Be prepared to spend time with your research. Some materials might require interpretation, whether for detail or old handwriting. Not all records are clear and obvious. Remember, we're looking at old stuff here. Label your research binder. I think I said that before. Once you look at a book and determine that there maybe is no information regarding your search, log it as wrong family or no information. Recording both negative and positive results will save you hours in the long run. Recording the page numbers of photocopied documents is also useful. Sometimes we accidentally cut off something on the copy when we're photocopying. So if you have a page number, you'll be able to return to it and recopy the page. Now you will be able to retrace your steps. You can consult a log sheet whenever you cannot remember where you discovered the source or the book. Keep the log sheet in a binder with your other research logs, so you can always refer to them easily. Make a note to record the names, dates, and all the details of where you found the information. What was the source? Where was it? Was it the library or the cemetery or the church? Write down the details of every book and microfilm and source that you find. You might need to look at these later. And guest books. A lot of places have guest books. This is a place where you can write down your name and contact information because somebody else might be doing the same kind of name searches as you. So if you write down the family name that you're researching, you might get free information from somebody. You can make it easy on yourself by carrying one of those stamps, you know, the type that you use on an envelope, but self-inked. I used to take those to home shows and places where I wanted to enter for a prize or if I wanted somebody to send me a brochure. So one of those return address stickers or stamps is a really good idea. It'll save you a lot of writing. So you can put those in guest books as well as on your binders. There'd be a lot of abbreviations in the records. They might look identical or confusing. You might not think they're important, but do make note of them when you see them. It's a good idea to find a resource list that will list common abbreviations, and they're all over the place. They're usually in the back of a good genealogical book. You can find those at the local library. What do you need to know about the records? Do you ever wonder what you'll find? Let's think about some of the things before you go on your research trip. Church records. some may astound you. In a record that may be very old or it could be very contemporary, some Czech church records change their names over time. The actual name of the church will change. So that's a bit of searching you're going to have to do. Not all cemeteries have a street address. And this is because without a building site, quite often no street address was given by a city or whoever was in charge of designating the area. You might, when you're looking for a cemetery, it might just say the 4700 block rather than an exact street address. And when you're thinking about immigration and passenger lists, depending on the year of the record, the passenger list might contain ship's details, such as the size of the ship, who the master was, when and where it left, the arrival date, the number of passengers, health certificates of some passengers. And sometimes they list various inspections and train schedules and various classes of passengers, whether it's first or intermediate. Some classes were grouped by returning citizens from or foreign settlers. It's a good idea to check at the end of each record, whether it's on a microfilm, in a book, or whatever format, to see new notes about the passengers. These were afterthoughts, and sometimes passengers were picked up en route and they weren't in the regular passenger lists. Sometimes there are details of deportation of persons, and sometimes there are border entries. So they all come under the immigration lists, and it's a good idea to just keep on looking. Another thing to keep in mind is that passengers from mainland Europe often were boarded on transatlantic ships, and they went to Great Britain before they actually left. If you're lucky, you might find the place of birth in the passenger lists. And some columns indicate races of people. And there are all sorts of examples of Russians and Finns and Dukobors and Mennonites and Turkish, Armenian, Assyrian, Egyptian, Arabian. And these kinds of clues will help you look further. Sometimes the immigration records are arranged by port and date of arrival. So if you can, it's helpful to know the month and the port and the date of arrival before you start looking. And a bonus would be if you knew the ship's name. So what sort of resource centers are there around here? What can I do near Brookings? Well, there are the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, the Family History Centers. There are three in this area, Brookings, Gold Beach, and Port Orford. They all have phone numbers, and they're very easy to find. And usually they only are open a couple of days a week. So it's a good idea, again, to phone ahead. There are libraries in Brookings and in Gold Beach. There are historical societies in Gold Beach and all up and down the coast. There are museums and all kinds of places. In a later show, I'll be talking about where the records are and what you will find in the records and how to use them. So before you leave home, make sure you've asked those last-minute questions that are going to help you with your research. Be a detective. And don't accept, I haven't got a clue for an answer. You might ask a question like, was this before or after you were married? And what do you remember about the house that you grew up in? That kind of thing. Check your list of supplies. We've talked about all kinds of things that you would want to take on your trip. Check your facility contact information. And remember that make every minute count. And it will help you make your research trip successful. In closing, I'd like to share a new discovery for me. Many listeners might already know about this radio show. It's called As It Was. It's on Jefferson Public Radio on 91.9 FM. It runs Monday to Friday at 9:30 and 1 o'clock. The program has all kinds of interesting essays dedicated to the history of Southern Oregon and Northern California. I was listening to a very interesting collection of stories the other day. So until next time, this is Judith Lidges at Curry County Radio, KCIW, wishing you good hunting and your family history research. Thank you for listening.
If you like this podcast, consider donating something. The sooner we can raise the money, the sooner we get on the air. Please go to our website, kciw.org. Thank you.